There we go.
There
okay.
You go.
That time it worked. That time it worked. Who just joined?
Daniel Friend.
Good. Thank you for joining, Daniel. Okay. So I'm Steve Piersanti. I'm the president of LDS PPA, and we want to welcome all of you to this LDS PPA roundtable featuring Susie Bills. Susie started freelancing in 2006 while she was also working full-time as an editor and writer. In 2011, still working at a corporation and freelancing on the side, and having just completed an MBA, she was ready to take the plunge and become a full-time freelancer. Oh, how fearful. Over the years, Susie has learned how to make freelancing enjoyable and profitable, whether on a part-time or a full-time basis, and she's constantly learning new strategies for success, and she enjoys starting best practices with others. She's taught freelance classes at BYU, and she's presented at the topic of various events, and she's excited to lead today's discussion on freelancing and to depart from the script slightly. She's also one of the nicest people in the world.
Thanks.
And so we have on the call that I know of Adam McLean, Kaylee Brown, Lacey Wolf, Devin Jensen, Kaylin Flanders, and Daniel Friend. Anyone I missed who's on the call? Oh, I guess not. Okay, Susie, you're on.
Okay, thank you very much, Steve. Just to start out, so I really want to gear what we talk about to what you're interested in knowing. Some people have already sent in some questions that I was going to make sure to address, but are there any other questions? If you haven't already sent in questions, what topics would you like to make sure that we talk about?
Finding more clients.
Okay, I think that's definitely the big one. Anything besides that?
I might like to know about how taxes work with freelancing.
Okay, yeah. That's a fun one.
I also want to find out about how to get printers to, if you start on your own company, how to find a printer and how to market books that you edit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good one too. Okay, and if there are any other topics that come up you think about during the hour, feel free to ask them. Also, you know, I'm not the only one. I know that other people have freelanced and have different experiences, so feel free to share your input as well. I'm not the all knowledgeable one. So,
see, when we get to the how to find printers, this is Steve. I'll weigh in on that.
That's great, because that's one of the areas that I don't have as much experience with. So I will definitely appreciate your input. I think let's go ahead and start with clients, because that it seems that everybody who provided questions, they all want to know, how do you get clients? How do you get more clients? How do you get better clients? And it really is a big thing, and it really does, I think, affect how enjoyable your freelancing is. So I'll share some tips and some experiences and weigh in, please, on your experiences. So the first thing I would suggest in getting clients and marketing yourself is to be willing to let everybody you know, let them know that you're a freelancer, whether it's a writer, an editor, a designer, whatever skills you're marketing, make sure that people know that. It's okay, you know, I think sometimes we feel like that we're pushing it on people, and it doesn't need to be that way. You can just casually, when people say, oh, what do you do? And I say, oh, well, I'm actually an editor and a writer, and I work with a variety of clients, and I'm always willing to work with new clients and see how I can help people. And so do it in a very casual, approachable way, but let people know. When you meet people, be willing to say, yeah, I'm an editor and writer, whatever your skills are. So and be willing to bring into conversations. Obviously, you know, you don't want to make it too forceful, but be willing to let people know. Other ways that you can let people know are put it in your email, have it under your name. On my email, it says something about if you're looking for writing and editing, contact me. And so it's just a little blurb, but everybody I send emails to, they see, oh, she is a writer and editor, and I've had people contact me because of that. You know, I know them for other reasons, and then they've contacted me and said, hey, can you edit this for me? And they only knew it because they saw it in my email signature. So that's another way. It's just an easy marketing tool to have it there. Some other things you want to do, make sure you have a LinkedIn account. LinkedIn I have found to be very effective, both as a way for you to seek out opportunities, but also as a passive way for people to find you and to contact you. I recommend, so besides just having your LinkedIn profile, which is very important to have, I believe that's having a LinkedIn profile and being a little active on LinkedIn is one of the most effective marketing tactics you can use, and I'll get into that a little bit more. But so have a filled out, a completed profile. So not just your name, but have your name, have that short little blurb of what you do, and it's okay to be confident. Mine, every time I see it, I feel a little maybe embarrassed because I am very confident in what I have as my tagline. I say, you know, professionally recognized writer and editor or something like that. And so when I see professionally recognized, I think, oh, that makes me sound, you know, I'm bragging. But really, it's just confidence. And it's true, you know, you don't want to say things that aren't true, but I have been professionally recognized. And so that lets people know that, oh, she knows what she's doing. And so it makes people feel confident in your skills before even having met you. So have it all filled out. Have all of your experience there. It can be helpful to get people to, you can have them post recommendations on your profile on LinkedIn. So build that out. Be involved in some of the groups on LinkedIn. For example, I'm a member of the BYU Alumni Association page on LinkedIn, and I'm various other alumni groups and professional groups. And I've gotten work through those. So several years ago, I had posted there was a discussion on the BYU's alumni page of just listing what your profession is, what you do. And so I added to that discussion, I just said, my name is Susie, I'm a writer and an editor, and I'm happy to help any of you and your businesses with any writing and editing needs. And that was it. And then I had somebody contact me and say, I think maybe you could be a good fit for my company. And since then, over the last couple years, I've made probably $10,000 or more dollars writing video scripts for this company. And so, you know, one post that took me 1 minute to write, I've gotten $10,000 of work from that simple step. And that's happened at other times where people have found my profile on LinkedIn and then contacted me for work. And so I haven't been the one reaching out. They've been coming to me. And so that's why I believe that LinkedIn is a very effective tool. If you have a profile, you've approached it so that it's really spotlighting your skills, and then being involved in some groups. And so if you want to get business in a certain type maybe a certain genre, or maybe you want to get into technical editing or technical writing, join groups on LinkedIn that are related to that topic, and so that you can contribute, and then people start to see, oh, he knows what he's talking about. He's a credible person, and when they need a freelancer, then they'll think of you, and they'll contact you. I think you might think, oh, probably that wouldn't happen to me, but really, I've heard over and over and over again that LinkedIn does work, and I've found for myself that it does work. Any questions specifically on LinkedIn and leveraging it?
Yeah, this is Devin. So what's the best way to join some of these BYU groups or whatever groups?
So if you go to LinkedIn and you can search and you can select groups, and then, you know, using whatever term, it will come up with a lot of groups that are related to that term that you've searched for, and then you can find which ones are most relevant. Some groups are, well, at least this is the case in the past, they are closed, and so you have to have certain criteria to join. If you're going to join the BYU Alumni Network, you should be an alumni of BYU, you know, that kind of thing. But there are just tons and tons of groups on LinkedIn, and so you can find ones that really are relevant to what you're trying to look for. Something to think about, for example, as an editor, you think, oh, well, I'll join some author groups. That can work, but a lot of times I've joined some author groups, and I found that most of the people in those groups, they're planning on self-publishing. They really don't have much of a budget for editing, and so that's not a very good place to find a lot of work and to find work that will really pay self-sustaining amount of money. So think of it strategically. Okay, what groups can I join that are going to have the people in it that will be able to pay for my services?
Fantastic. I just joined.
Great.
That's fast impact from your presentation.
Yeah. Can't beat that. And so really, I recommend that if you haven't spent much time on LinkedIn, spend some time there. Just explore a little bit and see what there is there. And, you know, this goes into another question that somebody had asked that I was going to talk about, is how do you keep your skills up as a freelancer, because you're not getting, you know, most companies that you work for, there's professional development hours, and so you're getting some opportunities to increase your skills or stay current, but you don't necessarily have that as a freelancer. But you can do that by joining LinkedIn groups, and then you see what people are posting. They're posting articles. They're asking questions. People are providing feedback. And so you can see how different people are approaching issues and see what is kind of what the trends are related to that industry or that topic. And so that's one way that you can keep current with your industry or your niche within publishing overall, is by just reading through some of the discussion posts in LinkedIn groups.
Hey, Susie.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, I just want to add on to that that, like, interacting yourself where you're posting things is also helpful, because you're trying to create a community when you're using these media to build up your clientele.
Right. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks, Adam. Yeah. So, and there, you know, we won't spend more time on LinkedIn, but if you're interested, there are lots of websites that you can go to learn more about LinkedIn and to learn how to really hone your profile and get it to be the best it can be, so that you're marketing yourself the best you can on LinkedIn. So there's lots of resources online for learning how to really leverage LinkedIn. Some other tips for getting clients and for just marketing. So the other social media, you can use Facebook, Twitter, you can use Pinterest. And so see which social media platforms work for you. You don't need to be on all of them. So choose a couple that you feel are most valuable for you and then spend a little time on those. For example, I don't use Twitter. it's just not something that I have decided to on. But I know other people who do use Twitter, and it's been effective for them in marketing. On social media, so say for Facebook, you can, when you finished working on a project, maybe you've done a book cover design, you can post it on your news feed and say, hey, here's the cover, or this is the, when a book is published, say, I designed this cover. Little things like that to let people know, again, that, oh, it reminds the person, oh, yeah, that's right, they do book cover design, or they do this, or whatever. And so it just keeps it in their minds, and so when they have a need, then they think of you. Or I've had it happen before where a friend had another friend who needed editing, and so when that friend posted on Facebook, then kind of the mutual friend, they said, oh, well, contact Susie Bills because she's an editor. And so, and I had never talked to that friend specifically about being an editor, but I had posted some things on Facebook, and I had a Facebook page about me editing. That friend knew. And so, again, you're just getting the word out there that you are a freelancer in this area. And it really is amazing how just those little reminders that you do that, then they really do come back to you, and people will refer you or refer others to you. Another idea is a business card. It doesn't have to be too fancy, but just has the point that, oh, yes, I do this, this, and this. And don't hesitate to give it to people when you meet them. And you can just say, hey, it was great meeting you. Here's my business card. If you or anybody else ever needs some writing, feel free to contact me. And I've done that before, and that's also worked for me. And with a lot of these things, I think it's important to remember that you won't necessarily get the response within a week. Often it's longer. There's a lot of research out there that shows that, I forget the percentages, but most people you talk to are not ready right away for your services, but they will be within 18 months. So if they have your contact information, and if you pop up a couple times within those 18 months to keep them you on their mind, then when they are ready, they do need your services, you're going to be the one they contact because they have your contact information and they remember you. So it can be a slow process, but it definitely does work. I've seen that over and over again. And business cards, honestly, you can get.
Did we just lose Susie?
Uh-oh.
That's not good.
Okay. Uh-oh. is everyone else still on?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm on.
Okay. Well, so Susie dropped off, so I wonder if she'll figure it out in a moment. She got booted off maybe off the conference call. Does someone have her cell phone?
Hi. So I'm back on.
Okay,
so,
very good.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Anyway, so business cards, you can get online, lots of online ordering sites for very low cost. So I believe it's worth the small cost for doing that. Also, have a website. I believe that's also very important. My personal experience is that most people don't find me through my website, but having a website, once they hear of me, then they will go there. And just having a website, especially in this online age when you're a lot of people, you're not working with in person, and you may not have even met them in person. So it's all kind of electronic, and it can make you wonder, is this really a real person or not? Having a website just makes people feel a little bit more comfortable. And when you have a little bit about you, you have your bio, if you have a picture of yourself, it just makes people feel more comfortable saying, okay, I'm willing to work with this person. I'm willing to give this person my money because they feel real. And they've done, again, lots of research that shows that having a picture of yourself leads to more business. So people, if they see an image of you, they feel more comfortable working with you. So I really recommend having a website and having a picture of yourself, and make sure that it's professional looking. So again, along the lines of your LinkedIn profile picture. So something, it's not you having fun on the beach. It's you have more business, casual picture. But having your website there, and make sure on your website, so you're listing the services you provide. In addition to that, do a little bit about yourself. And on every page, have a call to action. So call to action is business speak. What it means is every page, you're leading them closer to contacting you and to working with you. So on your homepage, you say, have just a brief overview of what you do, and then at the bottom it says, contact me now, and it has a link to contact you. Or maybe it says, check out my detailed services, and there's a link to a page with your services on it. But each page should have some kind of call, you know, you're encouraging them to do something. And what you're encouraging them to do should be leading them closer to contacting you and saying, hey, let's work together. Okay. So that's also, you basically, if you don't have a website, then you're just turning yourself. Your website doesn't need to be really fancy. It can be pretty bare bones. Or just simple, you can use, there are lots of free websites. There's Weebly and WordPress and Squarespace, Wix, where you can do a free website, and they have templates that you can choose from, and it, they make it really easy to put together a website, and so it's really, it's worth the few hours to get that up. And along the way, if you do have any questions or input, just interrupt me. I don't mind. Hey, another idea is to go to conferences and meetings where your ideal clients will be. So, and we'll use Adam as an example if he doesn't mind. So I believe recently there was the LTUE conference, and so that's for like science fiction and fantasy, I believe. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But so he talked with various authors there and other people, and it sounds like, Adam, you can take over the story, but you made some really good connections and established some opportunities to work with some of them in the future, correct?
Yeah, I did. So I work with an author who's really goes L3 a lot, and she actually toted me on a panel that she was on because I was talking to her how I wanted more freelance opportunities. And then this year alone, I'm also going to the Publishing University, which comes up in a few weeks, to FanX, where I'm going to talk to authors, to Salt Lake City Comic Con and WorldCon and LDS Storymakers. So obviously, I want to focus on freelance fiction, especially in fantasy and science fiction. but I just go and I talk to authors there. It's a lot of fun. Just get to learn about their books and then give them my card.
Great. Yeah, and that really does work. And again, you know, you're not every author that you work or talk with you're going to get business from. But, you know, if you just even get one and you establish that relationship, and so maybe you do several books with that one author, and then the power there is that that author then tells all their author friends, oh, you should work with Adam because I've really enjoyed my experience working with Adam. He's been a great editor or whatever. And so that's where really the success comes from, is you start a snowball. Oh, is somebody going to say something? Okay. so honestly, after probably a year of freelancing full-time, I really didn't do any marketing. It was just referrals coming into me, and they would come in every week. So it was a steady flow of referrals because the people I had worked with, they referred me to all their acquaintances. And so that's where the power comes in. You have worked with some people, and so you've gotten your name out there. You've done great work, so they're really pleased with you, and so they want to tell everybody else about you. It's kind of, you know, I see a lot of parallels with the gospel, because, you know, when we learn about the gospel, then you get excited about it. You want to tell other people about it, right? And it's the same thing with a good experience with a freelancer. You start telling everybody else, oh, you should work with them too, because they are amazing. And so you just get this snowball effect going. And so that's really powerful. Some ways to encourage the snowball is to ask for referrals. A lot of people, clients, don't necessarily think about it, or sometimes it's been funny because I'll have clients who will email me and they'll say, Susie, I hope you don't mind, but I gave your name to somebody else. And so, you know, it's almost like they're afraid that I would be upset that they referred, were referring me to other people. And I said, oh, well, thank you. That's wonderful. But so sometimes it's helpful to encourage them. And so I started adding to my invoices that, thank you for letting me work with you. Please feel free to share my contact information with other people. So you're reminding them then. Also a great time to ask for referrals is once you finish the project and they come back and they say, oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your help. And then you say, well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed working with you, and I love doing this. So if you know of anybody else I could help, feel free to connect us. And so that's a good time. Basically, it's always a good time when they're giving you compliments. They're happy, and so they want to do favors for you because they recognize the value that you provided them. Some other ways, some ideas for marketing is you can give some incentives. So maybe if you're talking to people, you can say, yeah, I'm offering 20% off the first project. Or maybe you say, you know, if you have me write 3 blog posts instead of 1 blog post, I'll give you this percentage discount. Or maybe you do, on your following project, I'll give you a 20% discount for referrals. So, you know, if you refer somebody to me and I do a project with them, then on your next project, I'll give you 20% off. So you can do some discounts, incentives like that to encourage people as well. And I think one other thing on the marketing side, and then we can move on to some other things, an idea is join an association. So the Editorial Freelancers Association for the U.S., it's probably one of the biggest associations for editors. And if you join their membership, then there's a job board. And so you, oh gosh, I would say sometimes every day you're getting a job posting of somebody looking for either a freelancer or sometimes a full-time editor. But there's a constant flow of job opportunities that are coming up. If you go to copyediting.com, they have a job board there, and it's free, and there regularly are new jobs being posted. There's also the ACES job board, and so that's the American Copy Editors Society, and you can sign up for job postings, and they're a little less regular, but it's kind of funny that this morning since this morning in my email, there are 6 or 7 job postings from ACES. And some are full-time jobs and some are just freelancing. So it depends, but so find some associations for the type of work that you're doing. So I mainly know of the writing and editing ones because those are the skills that I focus on, but I know there are ones for design, typesetting, marketing. So find some associations that you can join that have they list job opportunities. And also, for example, the Copy Editors Listserv, you can have, if you join that, and some of these are paid memberships, some are free, so the Copy Editors Listserv is free. And you can have your profile posted on their website, and people have gone there and contacted me and others with job opportunities because they've seen your profile posted there. So it's just another marketing strategy to get your name out to another location. So the more your name is out there, the more likely people are to see it and then to contact you. So those are some of my marketing and client suggestions. Really, once you start, it's the most effective way is to get word of mouth and also to get repeat work from the same client. So it's always less work and less expensive to get more work from the same person than to find new clients. So working with businesses, see whether you can add more services. So maybe right now you're writing blog posts for a company. And then you can also let them know, oh, hey, I also edit, so I could write the blog post as well as edit your monthly newsletter. So let them know of other skills that you have and how you could provide benefit for them. And so that's an effective way. Or suggest, right now I'm doing this small part, but I could help with the overall production. Or maybe going back to the blog post example before, suggest, okay, rather than just doing one blog post, how about we schedule blog posts for the next 6 months so we can really have a strategic direction that the blog posts are going and testing to see what strategies are most effective in bringing more people to the blog and more engagement. So think of ways that are beneficial for your clients that will result in more business for you. Okay, I know that's a lot, and I think I've probably just been talking really fast and going fast, but any questions, specific questions on getting clients, marketing yourself?
That was
great. I'm sorry, what was that?
I said, I've been typing furiously and taking notes. I've got most of it.
Good. I'm sorry. I'm probably talking too fast. Yeah.
I have a quick question. I'm just wondering about business names. So if you choose a business name and you make a website for that, is there any sort of legal fees you need to pay or any actions you need to take to make sure you have that name and that you're not going to get sued or anything like that?
Good question. So it depends. So if you want your if you've selected somewhat of a creative name and you want to make sure that nobody else is using that name, then you can file it with the U.S. government, and that there's a fee for doing that. So that's, you would be registering the name. So there's a fee for registering it. You can also do trademark, which you can trademark, but it's not necessarily legally as binding, and so it will steer a lot of people away from using that name, but it's not, you don't have a stronger case if you ever want to bring it to court. So going with mine, so I just go by Editing by Susie. I have figured that probably there aren't going to be very many people trying to use that name, and I haven't worried about it. So I haven't registered, trademarked it, anything like that. But if it is something that you really still is creative and you are planning on building it up so it's going to become well-known and you think there might be a problem, then it could be worth it registering it. Talking about names, I've seen and done a lot of reading about naming your business, and there's a lot of discussion, different opinions, but often a good way is to include your name in it, because then they can connect Susie, oh yeah, Editing by Susie. So there's just that connection there. Or if you don't use your name, do something that's easy to understand, and steer away from using interesting spellings, because so it might get people's attention when they're trying to search for that online or typing that into like a URL. It's very likely they won't remember the incorrect spelling, and so there could be problems there. So that's a good question about names.
Great, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if you're like creating a name like that, it is good to, just in case, go on to the U.S. copyright website and look through the name.
Mm-hmm.
If someone
mm-hmm.
else that copyrighted, then they can sue you.
Right, yeah, and so that's going back to the registered. So that's the other side of it, yeah. You want to make sure that you don't take a name that already has been registered.
The other major part of this is getting your URL,
mm-hmm.
And because that will tell you a lot in terms of who's claimed what territory and what you can use. And if you can succeed in getting a URL that is pretty close to your name, then you're probably in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that is a good idea. In the last couple of months, there's a lady on this editor's group that I'm a member of, who she was asking about input on the name of her business. And so there are a lot of interesting points that people brought up. But, yeah, so do some research. Go online. Some of the names that you are considering, Google them. See if anybody else has used them. See if the URLs, if they're already in use. Ask input of other people. And this could be actually a good marketing tool on social media. So post on Facebook saying, hey, I'm considering different names for my freelancing business. Which one do you like, A, B, or C? And so you're getting people's input, but you're also letting them know, oh, she's a freelance editor or she's a freelance designer, that kind of thing. So it's a good marketing tool. And that kind of goes with marketing books. I think this is a little different from what the question was, I guess, working more with printers. But, you know, you can do similar with, if you have different book designs and saying, okay, you're not sure which design you like the best, then post it on social media and get people's opinions on it. And that's a way that you're building interest in the book, because now people know, oh, this book is coming out, And so it's marketing for the book, marketing for you, and you're also getting people's input on it. So that can be an effective strategy.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, so there was a question that came in before about clients and anything you need to be aware of, watch out for, red flags. So I just want to address this really quick. Some things that I found are be careful if when you're initially talking with them, if they're disrespectful to you, then I found it's a sign that you might have problems later on, whether just working with them, whether them being satisfied with your work, or of them paying you. So just be aware of how they're treating you. Is this somebody that, how they're treating you, you would enjoy working with them? Or if not so much, then maybe steer clear of them. And sometimes as a freelancer, you feel like, I just need the money, I'll work with anybody. And so if that's the case, then, you know, you do what you need to do. But I've also found that sometimes they, if they decide that they don't want to pay you after all, then you've put in work and haven't made the money, and you would have been better off finding other clients. So just be aware of that. Something else I've found is if they are trying to really bargain with you or get you to decrease your prices a lot. In some cultures, bargaining is just part of the experience. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's a red flag, but when people just keep trying to, oh, well, can't you do it for this price? And that I found, and these are based on my experience, I found that that can be a signal that there will be trouble in the future and trouble with them being willing to pay you later on. And so with that, some of these problems are resolved. Well, a lot of these problems can be resolved by having a contract. I say never do work without a contract. The times that I have had, and I have had a few times when clients there have been issues in them paying me, and they were times when I didn't do a contract. So when you do a contract, I think it just makes people feel like, oh, this is much more real, and if I've signed a contract,
and professional
then,
too.
Mm-hmm, yes. Yeah, it makes you look like you are a professional. You're not just doing this, you know, it isn't just a lemonade stand that you're doing as a kid. This is your profession. And have everything in the contract. So specify everything, the due dates, the what exactly you're going to provide to them. If you're editing, how many rounds of edit. If you're writing, is there a specific word range? So be as detailed as possible. Also specify the price, when they're going to pay it. I require 50% up at the beginning of a project. And I haven't had, you know, I haven't had issues with people saying, oh, well, I don't want to pay you until you return the final product. And just requesting the 50% is protecting you from people who later on decide that they don't want to pay. But really, when you have a contract, that just avoids a lot of problems. I can share with you a sample contract. Maybe we can put a link to it on in the summary notes that we'll put on ldsppa.org and on Facebook so that you can get an idea of what to include in a contract. But those are the big things that I would say when being just making sure that you're not entering into a really risky situation of working with a client. Okay, let's get to taxes. And these things that I say about taxes, please keep in mind that I'm not a tax professional. And so I still recommend talking with somebody who is a tax professional, but I can give you basic guidance. So taxes are important to think about. That's something that you need to plan for in freelancing, because taxes, you'll be paying more taxes than you do working for a company full-time. So as a full-time employee, the company is paying part of self-employment taxes, but as a freelancer, you pay all of it. So in 2015, that rate was 15.3% of your income. And normally you would only be paying half of that if you were employed full-time. So, you know, you just have to plan and making more money so that you can pay those extra taxes. And also, in general, you know, you don't have, your employer isn't taking out taxes every month or every paycheck, and so you need to be setting aside the tax so you'll be paying your income tax. So a good rule of thumb is when you're setting your freelance rates, you need to, instead of saying, well, I can make X number of dollars if I are working full-time for this company, you need to be making X number of dollars plus the amount you would be paying in self-employment taxes, and plus health insurance. So all those things that you are footing the bill completely for yourself rather than getting it company subsidized, you need to be making more money so that you can pay for all those other expenses. So for taxes, make sure you're planning for paying the full 15.3% for self-employment. Also, if you're freelancing full-time, you need to make a quarterly estimated tax payment. Instead of waiting until April 15th to make all the payments, the complete payment, the U.S. government requires you to do it quarterly. If you don't do it quarterly, if you just wait till April 15th, then you'll be charged a small, like a small percentage, so like a late fee. So you won't be put in jail, but you are going to have to pay a small amount more because you didn't pay quarterly. And I think the reason why the government does it that way is that if you're paying quarterly, then you're not going to get as behind. Whereas if you didn't pay until the end of the year, then you're more likely not to have the money to pay your taxes. So the basic idea of the quarterly estimated taxes is it doesn't have to be spot on. It's more of a, I think that it's estimated. So you think this is how much you're going to make over the year, and so you divide that into four, and so each quarter you're paying a fourth of what you think your total yearly taxes are going to be. There are lots of sites online. The IRS.gov has some helpful information. I know I personally tend to think that the government's website is a little obfuse. It's hard to understand, but their tax web pages are really pretty good. So you can go to IRS.gov and get a lot of information there on self-employment tax, how much you're going to have to pay, the estimated quarterly taxes. Lots of other sites, they have calculators so that you can estimate how much tax you're going to owe and so how much tax you need to send quarterly. So I'm not going to go into the details of that. There are lots of tools online that you can get that information. So do make sure that you are planning on paying those taxes. So in my monthly budget, you know, I have my expected expenses, and part of it is savings. You know, each month I have an amount that I save, and then also I have an amount that I'm putting away to pay for taxes. And so I really recommend that you do it that way so that it's part of your monthly expenses is putting away, okay, I've estimated that I need to put have this much for taxes, so each month I'm saving however much that would be so that you have the money there. It's one of those not fun things. I think when I started freelancing full time, it's a little painful. It makes you say ouch. But then you get used to it and it's just the way it is. But just making a monthly habit to set aside that money, it makes things a lot less stressful. Any specific questions on taxes?
Yeah, I have one. I'm wondering, do you know if there is some threshold as far as how much you make in freelancing in order to be required to pay taxes on it? Like if you only made like $200 or something like that on freelancing for the year?
Yeah. Well, and it's say for if you're freelancing on the side and so you have a full-time job, they don't really distinguish between where the money is coming from. So if you only made $200 in freelancing that year, then you're not going to need to do quarterly estimated payments.
That would count as income not reported elsewhere, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So you don't have to fill out – so it's a little simpler. So and I don't know my suggestion, and again, I'm not a tax expert, but when I was freelancing part-time and still working full-time at a company, you know, you can do a couple of things. You can have just a little bit extra taken out of for taxes from your paycheck every paycheck. So you're just having more money sent to the IRS, and that's kind of making balancing what you're getting in freelance income. Or you can just save it, and you'll end a little bit more come April 15th. But it's not going to – well, yeah, if you're not making that much freelancing, then it's not going to be a big enough amount that the IRS will require, you know, make you pay like a late fee or that kind of thing. So if you're working full time and just freelancing a little bit on the side, you don't have to worry about the quarterly taxes. You don't really have to worry about it too much. It becomes more a thing if you aren't already having taxes taken out of your paycheck, at a company that you're working at. So I don't know, you know, basically anybody who makes over, I think it's like $400 or $600 is supposed to file their taxes April 15th. And so even if you're making just a little bit of money freelancing, if that's your income, like you're not, you don't have a full-time income in a company, then even if it's a small amount of freelancing, you still are supposed to file your taxes. So if it's under, you know, that small threshold, you won't actually owe anything to the IRS. But does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Susie, we have 4 more minutes just to give you a time check.
Thanks. Okay. And with any of these things, I'm happy to go into more detail with you one-on-one. So you're welcome to email me or we can set up a time to discuss on the phone and I can share more information. So let's go to the last thing. I think it was Kaylee who wanted to talk about printers and marking books that you edit. And so, Steve, if you want to go, since I think you probably have more than I do.
Yeah, so I'll address that. And it's actually a really, really simple answer for finding printers for people starting a publishing business or just freelancers who are doing helping people self-publish or doing projects on the side. The very simple answer is that the place where the printers congregate who want that kind of business, who are looking for that kind of business, is the Independent Book Publishers Association conference each year. That's where there are half a dozen or so printers that are really looking for that kind of business, and they do exhibit booths at that conference, and it just so happens that the annual national conference of the Independent Book Publishers Association is in Salt Lake City, first time ever in Utah, probably the first time it'll be in, you know, first time in many, many years before it comes back. But it's in Salt Lake City on April 8th and 9th. And so that's your chance to actually just go up to the booth, and they will have exhibit booths for the purpose of trying to find customers who want to get books printed. Or other kinds of works, you know, it doesn't have to be books, whatever it is you're trying to print, you would just go and talk to them at that conference.
Awesome, that's
and
great,
there's
thank you.
A special
you.
LDS PPA discount to go to
yeah.
if you're not already signed up. It is a little bit pricey, but you can get a 15% discount, I think, is the LDS PPA discount.
Yeah, I think 15 or maybe 20, yeah, but... and that's, yeah. Kaylee, does that answer your question, or did you have more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's actually perfect. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Great. Okay, we're almost out of time, but is there a final question anybody has?
Well, this is Jim.
Okay.
This time, maybe I'll just chime in association with that publishing university. LDS-PPA does have a session in the morning, and we have some folks talking about getting published and going viral. And we have several very good presenters. So, announcements are going out about that now, but it's a really good value, $10 for LDS-PPA members and $35 for general admission.
Yeah, and just to emphasize that, I think it, like Devin said, and Devin is one of the presenters, and I think he'll do a great job, but there are some, Lisa Mangum and Kathy Gordon at Cummins and Seth, I think, so some really great presenters, and so definitely a great value, a great opportunity to check that out.
Okay, well, thank you, Susie. You covered a lot of ground, and you obviously, you know, firsthand knowledge of what you're talking about, and I thought it was extremely useful. So thank you, and thank you all for joining our call. Susie, is it decided yet when the next call is, or not yet decided?
Not yet. It should be the second half of April.
Okay, very good. And when we send out information about it, please tell others. And this is really a lot of useful information, a convenient format. And thank you, Susie, for arranging these in general and for being our presenter today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.